It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You're listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
Hello, America. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to the Second Amendment Radio Show. We like to snip that down, call it 2A Radio. The site is 2aradio.com. Anytime you want to go check that out. You know, they say when you're a kid, your parents look at you and tell you, look, you know, you got to kind of rise above it. If somebody's really poking at you, try to rise above it. Try to rise above it. You know, be the bigger person. Which is a good plan most of the time. But every once in a while, the person that's goading you, you're trying to rise above, and they won't stop. Generally because they're too ignorant or just plain too stupid to learn that you don't want to play their dumb game. Well, eventually you get tired of it, and looking over and looking beyond and taking the high road doesn't seem to be working all that well. So you wind up your fist and you punch this person right square in the face. And you ring their bell. Then usually they get the idea, ooh, maybe I should have stopped a little while ago. I guess I didn't realize how ignorant and stupid I was. Today's show, we're going to play a little bit about that between me, yours truly, and the Brady campaign to completely screw every American out of owning a gun and leave us all defenseless victims across the entire United States. I think that's their official name. Now, Paul Helmke happens to be the head of the blank head, the chief head, whatever it is, the chairman head, whatever, of Brady Campaign. Now, of course, Brady Campaign was founded by Sarah Brady and Jim Brady. Jim Brady was on some cabinet-level position, I forget which, for Ronald Reagan. He got shot in the head when Reagan got shot in the chest back in, what was it, 81, 82? 81. It was 81. So, maybe it was early spring of 82. Anyhow, you get the idea. So, as it turns out, Jim Brady takes one to the grape. He's a vegetable now. And Sarah Brady, his wife, gets together and says, oh, we have to stop gun violence. So what we want to do is disarm America so that we're safe. Now, that's when you move exactly one step and you never take another step again, you never learned what's beyond your field of view from that first step. The first step is, oh, we should take away the guns, thump. Well, that was back in the early 80s. Nearly 30 years later, the Brady campaign has yet to take their second step. They still can't see around the corner and see what's really going on in the world. They're still locked in this hallway. The hallway of Jim Brady's rehab hospital, which is probably where Sarah Brady got this harebrained scheme. The organization used to be called Handgun Control Incorporated. All right. Well, Handgun Control Incorporated ended up switching gears to the Brady Campaign. The Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence, something like that. Because they want to incorporate more than just handguns. They wanted to take away all guns from all people. Who are the only people that should be armed in the eyes of Brady? Cops and military. Okay, well, let's forget about the Second Amendment. Let's forget about what the Founding Fathers learned when they were being oppressed by the British Crown. And let's forget about their experience in fighting for their sovereignty, fighting away the tyranny of the British Crown, and creating a nation based on knowledge and experience. Let's forget all about that. Let's just take everybody's guns away. Okay, now it's survival of the fittest. Imagine, if you will, the herd of gazelles. We've all seen this on National Geographic and such. You have the herd of gazelles. They're spooked by a pride of lions, or lionesses you may have. Now, when the gazelles start to run, the lions go after which one? The weakest one, the one in the rear. The big, strong, you know, pack gazelle, they don't get messed with. The little, stronger, weaker gazelle becomes dinner. So I have to ask you, what would happen if that gazelle was armed with a rifle and trained to use it? Because what we're talking about without the gun is survival of the fittest. You've got the pack of lions whose job it is to go out and attack and kill and do as they will. They will eat and then, well, basically they're just going to fertilize the plains with what's left over the gazelle at the end of the digestive process. That is the same thing that criminals do to those of us who are good, positive, active members of society. It's their job to take from us, as it is the lion's job to take from the herd of gazelles. All right? With that being said, if the herd of gazelles were armed gazelles, what would happen to the lion? Well, the lion would go hungry. The lion wouldn't be able to attack the gazelles because it's no longer survival of the fittest. Because even the weak, small, young, unable to take care of himself gazelle, with something like an AR-15 in his hands, can now fend off multiple lions. Would you agree? The lions are not going to mess with the gazelle with the AR-15. The lions are going to move on. They're going to find a different gazelle. Now, if we were all the gazelles, and the Brady campaign to completely screw every living, breathing American out of their right to protect themselves with a firearm, I think that's their official name. If they won and they got their wish, then what would happen? The people who prey on the rest of us in society, who make it their job to launch attacks, take what they want and leave. Now, keep in mind, if the lions launch attacks on a regular basis, every couple of days, they're out there attacking and then feasting, attacking, they get pretty good. The gazelles don't launch attacks and feast. They eat grass. Therefore, they don't really know how to defend against an attack being launched. A tiger can, a lion can, a gazelle cannot. So if the bad guys in society are launching the attacks regularly, that means they're good at it. Those of us who don't get attacked regularly are surprised and defenseless. If we have a gun and we can stuff it in the face of the scumbag lion trying to get us on the street, guess what? They're not going to make us their victim. We'll roll all of this in as we discuss the Brady campaign after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
Irresponsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back, everyone. By the way, happy Mother's Day to all of you mothers out there in the audience. I know I've got one, and she's actually out there listening. I don't know if she's going to listen to today or if this is probably Monday when it's reaching your ears. Mom, I love you. Hope you got my card. It's always been interesting on Mother's Day around my house because Mom's birthday is always the week before Mother's Day. It would kind of be like having your birthday on December 22nd and Christmas is right around the corner. Anyhow, always trying to take care of Mom as best I can. Back to the Brady campaign to completely hose every red-blooded, living, breathing American and visitor within the confines of the United States out of being able to protect themselves with a gun and become the victim of a crime. I think that's their official name. Well, they have decided to show really their complete ignorance with things such as a new campaign to ban what they call assault clips. Not knowing the difference between a clip and a magazine is, it really, it helps to show your ass, how ignorant you are. And of course, you're sticking to it. Assault clips. Okay. Well, they actually came out with a ranking of the states based on the state's anti-gun laws. They call them gun laws, or like, you know, what was it, crime laws, anti-gun violent laws. What they are is their anti-freedom laws. We're going to listen to this. This is Paul Helmkink running his mouth.
We just released the 2010 state scorecards from the Brady campaign to let folks know how their states are doing. You can go to the Brady campaign website. There's an interactive map that'll show how your state is scoring and what they're doing and what they could be doing to help reduce gun violence. Another new feature on our website is a quiz to see how well folks understand what our state laws are concerning gun violence. California is the number one state. There's another five states that have good laws. Those states have some of the lowest level of gun violence per 100,000 population in the country.
Which is a law. We'll get it. We'll get into that.
In the country, the next five states are 45th, 46th, 47th, 48th, and 50th in the country in terms of gun violence rates. So
now so you know, we're going to go through those actual numbers, and these are complete lies. What they are is they're Brady's numbers, not the numbers out of the Department of Justice.
This shows that states that have good gun laws, it makes a difference. There's less gun violence in those states. But there's way too many states that do nothing or next to nothing in terms of trying to fight gun violence. At the bottom this year, one of the states is Arizona.
Here comes the cheap shot.
Shooting in Tucson earlier this year showed what happens when you have no gun laws on the books. The Tucson shooter didn't break a single law until he pulled the trigger the first
time. And that's an absolute lie. Jared Loeffner, who pulled the trigger, he lied on his application to actually buy the gun. He lied on his Form 4473.
Our gun laws at the national level are too weak. Our gun laws at the state level in most states are way too weak. We need to be doing more like California and the other high-ranking states to do something about gun violence in this country. We need your help, so go to the Brady campaign.
Yeah, so here's a guy who doesn't want to read the last few words of the Second Amendment that say, shall not be infringed. Oh, we need to infringe more and more and more. That's what he's saying. I don't care if he realizes what he's saying. Let's go through this. What they call it. It says test gun IQ, the Brady 2010 scorecard test, the gun law IQ test. So we're actually going to go through this live right now. I'm clicking on the click here to begin part of this. We're going to go through the first one, which says question one. Requiring a background check for handgun sales by private sellers and licensed gun dealers helps reduce illegal gun trafficking within a state. Pick the percentage. A, 18%, B, 28%, C, 38%, D, 48%. Okay. First of all, if it's within a state, there's no such thing as trafficking. Trafficking, so you know, by definition is across state lines. Take into account also, what is your definition of trafficking? And how could this possibly be traced? We don't know. The Brady campaign has created this. So obviously, the answer is probably going to be D, 48%. Let's see what they have to say. Yes, the Brady campaign's manufactured information certainly is 48%. They say research shows, not crime statistics, not police arresting people for breaking law, nothing like that. It says research, Brady campaign's research shows, that requiring a background check for handgun sales by private sellers as well as by licensed dealers helps reduce illegal gun trafficking within a state by as much as 48%. Now, define illegal gun trafficking. They don't do that. So if we have to accept what they put on there, at least that's what they'd like us to do. I reject it. Here's question number two. How many states require background checks on all handgun sales, including all private sales at gun shows? 7, 12, 31, or 43? It's going to be 7 because what they want is they want a lot of people to actually be bleeding hearts and say, oh, well, we should have more. Let's see what the answer is. Of course, the answer is 7, and it says, sadly, as it begins this little this little tidbit that they have. Sadly, only California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island require background checks for handgun sales by private sellers as well as by licensed gun dealers. Well, let's go to the crime stats of 2009, the most recent ones that I am able to get online. California. California has, by, let me highlight this line. California has by, where'd the line go? Okay, line number 10. They have 3.7. Is the number, 3.7 people per 100,000 are victims of gun crime in California. All right? Now, the Brady campaign's other states, let's see, they also have Connecticut, Hawaii, Maryland. Let's look at a couple of these. Connecticut. Connecticut has, let's see here, line number 12, Connecticut. They have 1.99. So two people per 100,000 are victims of gun crimes. Hawaii. Hawaii has, Hawaii, the Aloha state, 0.7. Notably low. It should be low. I don't know how many of you have ever been to Hawaii. You don't go there looking to go on some sort of a murderer's bench. It is a very chill place to go. Let's look at Maryland. Now, Maryland is probably going to change this quite a bit because Maryland has some very ugly crime stats. Look at this. 6.06 per 100,000. What's the national average? Well, the national average is 2.98. So far, California, Maryland, they're above this. Let's see. Connecticut was just a little bit below at 1.99, basically two. Let's see. What else do they have? We have New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island. So we'll go down to New Jersey, check the list here. New Jersey says, line number 35 here, 2.56 per 100,000. Pennsylvania has 4.02, again above the average. Rhode Island at 1.71. Well, what can you expect from a state with a larger population to begin with? So you can see that these are all over the map. The way that the Brady campaign is rating these guys is on their gun laws, not on the crime statistics. If they screw you, they screw me, and they screw everybody else out of being able to own and possess a gun, then they rank high with Brady. It doesn't have anything to do with the crime stats. So, they don't really care. What they're looking for is to get you, get me, get your neighbors, get your coworkers, get your family all lined up, strip all of the guns and ammo away so only the caretakers, the cops and the military, can actually have guns. We'll continue on with this ludicrousy as I take the Brady campaign head on in a battle of knowledge. And I gotta say, it's kind of like having a battle of wits with an unarmed group. Stay tuned. There's more to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here to 2A Radio.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys, and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back from the show, or from the break. Welcome back to the show from the break. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. We're going to continue on with this ludicrous, what they call an IQ test. On gun knowledge, gun law knowledge from the Brady campaign. It says, which state has the highest gun death rate, including murder, suicides, and unintentional shootings? The allowable here are California, New Jersey, Louisiana, and Michigan. What they're gonna do is they're gonna say it's Louisiana. Now, they're not gonna say it's California because they rank too high on the screwing people on gun laws, as well as New Jersey and Michigan. So let's see. Is it Louisiana? Ding, 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 ding. The correct answer is Louisiana. What do they have to say? Louisiana gun death rate is 19.86 per 100,000 population. That was 2007. Hawaii is the state with the lowest, with 2.82 per 100,000. Now, again, they're talking 2007 numbers. Let's look at the 2009 numbers. If we look at the 2009 numbers, let's see, number 17, Idaho has 0.33. Now, how are the gun laws in Idaho? Well, they're pretty favorable. Let's actually look at this one. You'll appreciate this. In the state of Vermont, keep in mind, Vermont has no gun laws on the books. None. All of the gun laws are at state and county levels. Okay? Vermont had a grand total in 2009 of 7 murders in the entire state. How do they stack up? Well, 4 people died, 4 of the 7 died, by cutting utensils, knives of some kind. 2 of them were killed by hand, and 1 of them by some other sort of a weapon. The total number of gun deaths in the state of Vermont in 2009 were 0. 0.00% of the population were victim of gun crimes in Vermont in 2009. What about in Utah? Utah fails miserably on the Brady test. The lowest ranking states for what the Brady campaign just came out with are Alaska, Arizona, and Utah. Utah had a 0.91 out of 100,000. Not even one person out of 100,000. 0.91. How about South Dakota? South Dakota with wonderfully free gun laws. Matter of fact, to get a concealed weapons permit in South Dakota, you walk into the sheriff's office, fill out a form, pay them money, they give you a paper permit, they mail you the one in the mail. What is the gun death rate per capita in South Dakota? 0.57%. Starts to blow a lot of holes in Brady's theory, doesn't it? How about the District of Columbia? Some of the most restrictive laws in the entire country. But what does Washington, D.C. have as their crime rate per 100,000? Gun death rate? 18.84%. Wow. Seriously? 19 out of every 100,000 people in Washington, D.C. are killed by gun. And you're not even supposed to almost own guns there. Right? Seems to be blowing a lot of holes in Brady's deal, but let's move on just a little bit. Let's go to their next question and their gun law IQ test, as they call it. Which U.S. state has the strongest gun laws? Is it Rhode Island, New York, Utah, or California? Well, strongest, let's define that. Strongest as in the most free? Strongest as in I can own the guns that I want to protect myself? Or strongest as in anti-gun laws? Which state has the strongest anti-gun laws? Of course, that's going to be California. As we pull that up, and we're going to see what they have to say. They say California earned 80 out of 100 points on the 2010 Brady State Scorecard. California residents appear to be reaping the benefits of the hard work of their grassroots activists, including local allies with Brady campaign chapters. Gun deaths declined by 20% faster in California than in the rest of the nation from 1993 to 2006. We're talking about five-year-old data now. And of course, it says Utah is tied with Alaska and Arizona for states with the weakest gun laws, earning 0 points out of 100. Again, let's look at those numbers. Alaska, Arizona, Utah. Let's see. Alaska has the gun death rate of 8.02. Arizona, 1.88. I'm sorry, the 8.02 is Alabama. My mistake. Alaska, 1.88. And Arizona, 3.04. Now, this is 2009. The laws have gotten better in Arizona since then. Now, let's go back down to Utah again. Remember those numbers? Utah was 0.91. So, if the Brady campaign says that they're low on the Brady campaign's list, that means they're high on my list, high on our list. If they're number one in California, it means it's number 50 or worse, if possible, when it comes to California. 51 if we include D.C. California's gun death rate, 3.7. Again, the national average, 2.98. Close to a full point higher. Okay. Let's carry on with this lunacy. With the Brady campaign's gun law IQ test. Their next question. When comparing the most rural areas of the country to the most urban areas, which have the highest rate of gun deaths amongst youth ages 0 to 19? The answer is either A, the most rural areas have a higher gun death rate, or B, the most urban areas have a higher gun death rate, or C, the gun death rate are about the same. Now, I'll tell you what they're going to do. They're going to say C, about the same, because they want to take away guns from everywhere, not just one place or another. But they don't have the statistics to uphold it. This is what they say. Gun death rates, yes, of course it was C, both. Gun death rates among youth in the most rural and most urban areas of the country are about the same. Rural youth suffer more gun suicides and accidental shooting deaths, while urban youth are more often victims of gun murders. Now, how can you compare this? How can you do that? Let's take a rural state. All right, we're just going to pull out a rural state here. Let's see. I'm looking at Georgia. No, they have Atlanta. What's a rural state? How about Iowa? Iowa is a relatively rural state. Iowa, their numbers are 0.40. Okay. Let's find us another rural state. 0.40 out of 100,000 people are victims of gun death. How about, let's say Montana. Montana's rural. Montana's numbers, 1.97, a full point below the national average. Let's see here. How about Nebraska? 1.42. Nebraska is really below the average. How about New Hampshire? New Hampshire, the Free State Project, right? I think Loudoun is the only major city there. New Hampshire, what's their gun death rate? 0.34. Oh, my goodness. 0.34. Well, that's incredibly low compared to the national average. How about North Dakota? North Dakota, oh, my goodness. I look at that, and it's 0.49. Very far below the national average. Oregon, they have Portland, which can be violent. Let's see what their rural, they're rather rural. Their numbers, 1.09. How about that? We'll go through another rural state. Let me see here. Okay, we did South Dakota. South Dakota was what? 0.57! Scumbags. We'll undress a little more of this after the break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
You can have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back, everybody. Continuing on with the Brady campaign to completely screw you, me, and everybody else in America out of being able to own a gun. I think that's their official name. They say, how many U.S. states earned the maximum Brady state scorecard points for keeping guns out of sensitive public places and allowing local control? Well, that's kind of a contradictory question. How many states keep them out of public places but allow local control? How can a state mandate something and then allow local control? I'm going to say the answer options are 2, 7, 16, and 35. They're probably going to say 2 to show that we need to have more control. Let's see what their answer actually is as I click 2. And, come on, I'm going off their lousy website. Oh, no, the answer is 7B. It says 7 states earned the maximum state Brady, earned the maximum Brady state scorecard points for keeping guns out of sensitive public places and allowing localities to adopt laws that meet their local circumstances. California, Connecticut, Hawaii, Illinois, Massachusetts, New Jersey, New York. We just went through their crime stats. I don't think that we hit Illinois or Massachusetts yet, so let's go ahead and take that opportunity right now, shall we? Let's see, Illinois and Massachusetts. Massachusetts is, let's see here, 1.56. They are under the national average of 2.98 when it comes to deaths by firearms. And Illinois, this will be interesting to see. Illinois, 2.99. The average being 2.98, so they are right at the national average. These numbers don't seem to be jiving with the arguments that the Brady campaign continues to put out, yet misleading misinformation to take your guns away. They say, which two U.S. states had the lowest youth gun death rate in 2007, the latest year available? Which, it is not the latest year available. Is it Hawaii and Rhode Island? Is it Louisiana, Alaska, New Hampshire and Vermont, or Kansas and Oklahoma? Now, just by placing them the way they are, it's not going to be Louisiana, Alaska, because Louisiana, we know, has a high death rate. They always do. And Alaska, they're not going to promote Alaska because Alaska is a truly free state, as are New Hampshire and Vermont, so they're not going to promote those. Kansas and Oklahoma, they're trying to throw you off. It's going to be Hawaii and Rhode Island, both of which have very restrictive gun laws. Let's click on that and see. The answer is, drumroll please, of course, Hawaii and Rhode Island. Hawaii and Rhode Island rank amongst the top U.S. states on the Brady scorecard. By contrast, Louisiana and Alaska have the highest youth gun death rates and ranked at the bottom of the Brady state scorecard. Now, the vast majority of those deaths in Louisiana and Alaska come from what? Hunting accidents. They're outdoor states. They come from hunting accidents. Now, Hawaii and Rhode Island? Not a whole bunch of hunting going on in either one of those states, at least not by the youth. Now, I've got a couple of buddies of mine that live in Hawaii. They hunt all the time. But they also leave their island of residency, which is Oahu, the main one with Waikiki and Honolulu, and they'll go over to either the very rural areas of Lanai, Molokai, or the Big Island to do some hunting. Not just a regular hop, skip, and a jump for a father and son, or father and daughter, or mother and son, or mother and daughter to go out and go do some hunting. Just didn't happen that much. Not in Hawaii. And Rhode Island? What's there to hunt? If you know, let me know. Let's see, question number 8 out of 10. They say, it's a fact that strong gun dealer licensing laws help reduce illegal gun trafficking. But by what percent? It's a fact. Okay, so you're not going to tell us the fact. You're not going to give us anything behind the fact. It's not going to be, it's a fact with a little asterisk, and we go read the asterisk, and it tells us where your source is. We're just supposed to believe you. Okay, by what percent? 10%, 18%, 36%, or 64%? Again, the question is, it's a fact that we came up with that strong gun dealer licensing laws help reduce illegal gun trafficking. But by what? Define illegal gun trafficking and tell us where you get the fact. Of course, they're going to want it to be the highest percentage. Again, it's 10, 18, 36, or 64. I'm guessing they're going to tell us it should be 64%. And of course, It is, because it works to their benefit. They say strong enforced gun dealer licensing laws are estimated to reduce illegal gun trafficking in a state by 64%. In what state? Now, this is where it all works out. This is enforcement of gun dealer licensing laws. It's an estimate, and it's an estimate in one single state. But yet, they're going to want you to think that it goes across the board. Wow. How about number nine? How many U.S. states allow ordinary citizens to buy assault clips holding more than 10 bullets? As you see a picture of a kid shooting a Glock, which doesn't use a clip, their answer is going to be either 0, 17, 31, or 46 states allow. It's not an allowance. It's a denial of restricting someone's rights. Their answer is 46 states. It says 46 states allow citizens to buy assault clips. Still, they have no idea what they're talking about. It's showing complete ignorance. Holding more than 10 bullets. Four states ban assault clips holding more than 10 bullets. California, Hawaii, Massachusetts, and New York. New Jersey limits assault clips to 15 or fewer bullets. Assault clips. What ignorant morons. Just total asses. Then question number 10 on the Brady campaign gun law IQ test. How many seconds did it take the Tucson shooter, Jared Loughner, to fire 32 bullets from his assault clip without reloading? Now, this has nothing to do with gun laws. It's just using a tragedy to their advantage. 15 seconds, 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 90 seconds. It's 15 seconds. The correct answer is 15 seconds. And then, what do they say? Using a large capacity assault clip, the Tucson shooter was able to fire 32 bullets in just 15 seconds, hitting 19 people, including Representative Gabrielle Giffords, killing six, including Giffords staffer Gabe Zimmerman, a federal judge, and a 9-year-old girl. Just makes me gag the way that these guys use it. Hey, my final score, 9 out of 10. I only missed one on their soap opera test. Interesting. They say enough is enough. Click here to join in our demand for strong gun laws. No, it's strong anti-gun laws. Strong gun laws are laws to support guns. Laws that support the people to own guns. A gun is an inanimate object. Now, let me ask you something. How many people had to be hospitalized or seek medical care for having hot coffee thrown upon them by someone in their vicinity? Either picking up their own coffee cup and throwing coffee on them, or the perpetrator of the crime taking their own allotted amount of coffee and throwing it on the victim. How many people in the last year had to seek some sort of medical attention to the eyes, to the face, the rest of the body, arms, hands, who knows where, because coffee was thrown on them? Well, I'd venture to say, more so than people were shot with guns. I'd venture to say that. Is there a referendum out there to ban coffee or to restrict the form of container that you can put the coffee in and drink it from? Should you have to go to a licensed coffee brewer so that they can use their specialized equipment, which is only available to the licensed, trained, and overseen coffee brewing retail outlets, where they can brew the coffee, put it into a sealed container, where you can't just splash it about? You only sip it safely, like in a child's sippy cup, only it's sealed. Now, you can turn it back in, much like that of a disposable camera, and the trained professionals can take it to their labs and unseal it to be used again. So, all of you tree-hugging coffee drinkers can actually not have to throw away this sealed device that's recycled. There might even be some sort of a fee or tax to have it, right? Everybody's getting happy about that. Hey, let's pay more money on it. Where can that money go? That money can go to securing coffee freedoms. Strong anti-coffee throwing laws out there on the books, so we never have to deal with the scourge of someone being burned by coffee again. Is it the coffee that's the problem? Is it the cup that's the problem? Or is it the actual offender who's throwing the hot coffee? Who's to blame here? Is it the gun? Is it the bullets? Is it the person that's holding the loaded gun that has the bullets in it? Okay. Coffee in a coffee cup. Somebody's got it. Is anybody afraid of spilling that coffee on themselves? Well, if they're kind of a klutz, yeah. Are they afraid of picking up a... Now, is that coffee in the coffee cup going to spill on its own? No. Someone's got to grab it. Is the loaded gun going to fire on its own? No. It's got to be in someone's hand. So, should we ban coffee in coffee cups due to public safety? No, that's ridiculous. But yet the idea of banning guns and ammunition-holding devices, commonly known as magazines, not clips, are those to be banned? Or should we try to stop the behavior of those who spill and throw coffee, and should we try to stop the behavior of those who actually go out and murder and kill people? We'll talk about that after this next break. We're headed into the news. Stay tuned. We'll be back next hour.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Two-Way Radio. Now, there's been a lot of stuff going on in the news. Of course, this whole bit that came out last Sunday evening about Bin Laden, it's funny. I don't really ever talk about Bin Laden here on the radio or, well, even in my personal life. But it was interesting because last Sunday, I was chatting with a friend of mine. And I told him, I said, you know, it's it was early last Sunday morning, you know, before the show. And I said to my buddy, I said, you know, it's like this whole thing with Bin Laden. He's like the mysterious, bad guy that we keep holding on to the myth of. Just so we can have a reason to continue on with all of these wars. And then, lo and behold, about 12 hours later, we hear he's been killed. Really? Well, tell us about it. Well, we had some intel, some courier guy, and we sent in SEAL Team 6 on some army choppers, and they took him out, and it took 40 minutes, and his wife was shot in the leg, and we took his body out to the carrier out there in the Gulf, and they buried him at sea. What? Seriously? We're learning about all this now. Now, this is also a guy where there's been different reports of Bin Laden having died in as early as the year 2000, then in December of 2001, and then at various different instances from there, and I forget the lady's name who was running for some office in Pakistan that said in 2007 he was dead. She was murdered shortly after that. Who knows why? It may have had nothing to do with that. It may have had everything. Who knows? So then Friday, you have Obama allegedly meeting with SEAL Team 6, the guys that went in there and took out Bin Laden. Okay. Well, you knew that if anybody was going to go take out Bin Laden, it was either going to be Dev Group or it was going to be Delta, one or the other, Dev Group, the SEALs. It's going to be one or the other is going to go in there, right? I mean, because these are the guys that get the calls when it's time to go in and get stuff done. In more of a clandestine, smaller unit, insert by chopper and pretty much exfil out of there in a similar manner. These are the guys that you're going to call. It's Dev Group or it's Delta. That's it. Those are really the only guys on the list. Now, there's other small specialty groups that'll go out and do other things, like Air Force Pararescue. Those guys go in there, well, and they'll do, like, getting in downed pilots. Badass dudes, specialty mission. They're not going to go in there looking for the Bin Ladens of the world. Okay, let's say that Bin Laden was alive until last Sunday. Let's say that this is the one-week anniversary of his death. Let's say that. Well, his wife shot in the leg. You're going to have to do something with the family. Where's the family? What's his wife going to have to say about it? Is it really his wife? And, what's going on with any of the manipulations back behind the door with the family and what's going on? And Pakistan finds out about it later. Why? Guys, Pakistan isn't our ally. They're not our friend. We're the lesser of two evils to them. They get $3.5 billion a year in aid. Now, aid doesn't necessarily mean money. Doesn't necessarily mean finances. It doesn't discount that. Aid could also be tanks, artillery, food, construction equipment, construction supplies, who knows what. I gotta tell you, in certain parts of the country where there's things that we stomp on when we see it, a scorpion, a bug, something like that, that's mealtime in different parts of the world. In that part of the world, some of that stuff is mealtime. So, anyhow, who knows what, maybe it's cooking utensils to actually fry some cockroaches. I don't know. I don't know what all the aid is, but $3.5 billion a year. Okay, so you can either get in bed with us, the people you don't like, for $3.5 billion a year. That's like a prostitute not wanting to go with a certain trick, with a certain John, because he's a just disgusting individual, be it by height, weight, size, you know, who knows? It's a total turnoff to the particular prostitute, but he flashes a huge amount of money in her face. Okay, fine, I'll get through this because I'm doing it for the money. That's what's happening with Pakistan. They've prostituted themselves out to the United States. They are not allies of ours. We are the lesser of two evils. We gave them the option after 9/11, the contrived whole deal of 9/11. We gave them an option. Either you're with us or you're against us, and that's it. Make up your mind. If you're with us, you get all of this aid. We'll help with your military stuff. We won't bother because you're nuclear power, blah, da, 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 da. If you're against us, we're going to smack you down. So guess what they took? We'll take the money. I don't think they realize they're going to be in bed with us a decade later still. Anyhow, the whole thing with Project Gunwalker is starting to come to a head. Attorney General Eric Holder said in a hearing on Capitol Hill, he's only known about Project Gunwalker and Operation Fast and Furious for a couple of weeks. Now, we've been talking about it on the air for about a month and a half, but he's only known about it for a couple of weeks. Lie number one. Holder claimed that he doesn't know who authorized the operation and claimed the Justice Department has been cooperating with the Oversight Committee in their investigation of DOJ and that he was very offended by Representative Daryl Issa's suggestion that the Justice Department is responsible for the deaths of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry and ICE agent Jaime Zapata. No. Be as offended as you want, Holder. You're responsible! ATF is yours! Well, it's because guns used to kill the agents that I just mentioned by cartel members have been tracked back to Project Gunwalker, meaning those guns were sold to the cartels under the orders of the Justice Department's ATF. Of course, the Justice Department has refused to comply with the subpoena issued by the House Oversight Committee and their chairman, Issa, and who has now threatened to hold ATF and DOJ in contempt if officials continue their refusal to comply with the investigation. Of course, again, lie number two was when Holder said that they've been cooperating with the Oversight Committee. Total lie. Now, although the following exchange is a little bit lengthy, it will be worth listening to it. Here's the exchange. ISIS says, when did you first know about the program, officially known as Fast and Furious? Holder says, I don't know an exact date, but I probably heard about Fast and Furious for the first time over the past few weeks. For the first time over a few weeks. Okay, so deception, lie. ISIS says, now that you've been briefed on it, the president has said on March 22nd, that he didn't authorize it. Did your Deputy Attorney General James Cole authorize it? Holder says, I'm sorry, and ICE interrupts with, the Deputy Attorney General James Cole? Holder says, I couldn't hear. Did he? ICE says, did the Deputy Attorney General authorize it? Holder says, my guess would be no. Mr. Cole wasn't in the, I don't think he was in the department at the time the operation started. Well, we'll continue on with this goofy exchange back and forth and the lies of Eric Holder after the break. Stay tuned. It's going to get interesting. We'll be right back.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back from the break. We're going through the exchange between Representative Daryl Issa and Attorney General Eric Holder when talking about Project Gunwalker. Now, Issa says, did the Deputy Attorney General, James Cole, did he authorize Project Gunwalker? Holder says, my guess would be no. Mr. Cole wasn't in the, I don't think he was in the department at the time that operation started. Issa says, he's been aware of it much longer. Holder says, been aware of it much longer? Issa says, then you have been aware of it. How about the head of the criminal division, Lanny Brewer? Did he authorize it? Holder says, I'm not sure whether Mr. Brewer authorized it. You have to understand the way in which the department operates. Although there are operations, this one has gotten a great deal of publicity. Now, what does that mean? Well, ISIS says, there are dead Americans as a result of this failed and reckless program. So I would say that it hasn't gotten enough attention. Holder says, there's an investigation underway, to which ISIS says, I'm aware of the investigation. Okay. If nothing else, ISIS himself is conducting his own investigation. So all Holder's doing at this point in time is just stall tactics, delay tactics. I'm wondering, would it have been prudent for ISIS to just say, who authorized this? And go from there. Command him to throw somebody under the bus. Well, Holder responds by saying, we'll have to look to see exactly. I take it very seriously, the allegation. ISIS says, Mr. Attorney General, do you take seriously a subpoena signed by the clerk of the House? Holder says, of course. ISIS says, after 14 days of waiting for a letter to be signed or acknowledged or responded to, we sent a subpoena signed by the clerk of the House. 32 days later, last night, your people responded by giving us 92 pages, responding to three documents that were public records already. All were available and saying the other 400 or so responsive pages were not going to be produced. Do you stand by that? And were you aware of that? Holder says, I think we indicated that the other 400 pages would be made available for review, just to be accurate. So those, in essence, were being made available as well. ISIS says, that took 32 days to get that answer. Holder's response, the information was gathered as quickly as it could. I've taken steps to enhance our ability to respond to subpoenas and requests in that regard. I was not satisfied at the pace at which these things were happening, so I took steps to make sure that they are more responsive. Doesn't mean that they're going to speed it up. More responsive. Nothing is a response, among other things. ISIS says, Mr. Attorney General, do you agree that Congress has an independent responsibility, particularly when U.S. persons have been killed because of a failed, reckless program to investigate those who authorized, approved, knew about it, or were in some other way responsible for it? Holder responds, well, as I indicated to you last night when we spoke about this at the White House, that there is a legitimate oversight responsibility that Congress has, but I think also Congress has to use that oversight responsibly in a responsible way. We have cases and matters that will go on trial June of this year, to which ISA interrupted and said, Mr. Attorney General, is it true that those cases will go on trial in June? Those cases are basically a bunch of meth addicts who did the buying, that you did not have what this program was supposed to produce. You don't have the kingpins. You don't have the places the guns went. What you have are those people you already had on videotape many, many months before indictments were brought. Isn't that true? Holder says, there are cases that are important. There are cases that are important that we want to try and bring successfully. They're part of a scheme. You cannot look at a case as an individual matter and think it's unimportant because small cases lead to larger ones, and that's why it's important. ISIS says, Mr. Attorney General, my final question, though, is, from what you're saying about the scheme and so on, do you stand by this program? In other words, and it's not hypothetically really, if you knew about the program 90 days ago, 180 days ago, would you have allowed it to continue? And if not then, what were you going to do about the people who did not know and allowed it to continue? Holder says, well, what I've told people in the Department of Justice is that under no circumstance, in any case or investigation that we bring, should guns be allowed to be distributed in an uncontrolled manner. I said, so that would be consistent with the March 9th letter from Deputy Attorney General James Cole, in which he said, quote, we should not design or conduct undercover operations which include guns crossing the border. If we have knowledge that guns are about to cross a border, we must take immediate action to stop the firearms from crossing the border. He says, is that your policy today? Holder says, that's our policy. That's been the policy that I have tried to impose. I says, isn't Fast and Furious inconsistent with that policy? Holder's response? Well, that's one of the questions that we'll have to see whether or not Fast and Furious was conducted with what's consistent with what Jim Cole wrote there. What I would have to say today, that the Inspector General is, in fact, is looking at it. Now, this goes on and on. I'm not going to continue with this. This will drive you to blow your own brains out. Holder is doing nothing but stalling. Really. This is the way our Justice Department is being run. Now, these are the same guys that go after people who commit victimless crimes. But these very same guys in the Department of Justice have created a body count with their crimes. So, victimless crimes, we're going to prosecute them. The meth heads, the pot heads, the guys snorting lines of blow on the weekend. These are the guys we're going to go after. Victimless crimes. Now, all they're harming is themselves. All right? Kind of like Prohibition. Remember Prohibition? Now, alcohol's not good. So, we're going to make it completely, we're going to do a constitutional amendment to make it illegal. What happened? Crime rates soared. Repeal Prohibition, what happens? Crime rates plummet. Now, there's always going to be a certain percentage of people who don't handle their booze properly and commit crimes, mainly DUI. It's going to be the same thing with drugs. There's a whole lot of crime out there because of drugs now, today. If you eliminate the criminal penalties with it, you're probably going to have the same amount of people doing drugs, maybe a little bit more, but they're going to be more responsible. They're not just going to be the dregs of society that are out there doing everything they can, committing every crime they can to get their illegal substance because it's going to be legal to get. So these are the people the Justice Department are putting on trial. However, they, through their failed plan, through their failed Project Gunwalker and Fast and Furious, actually have a body count. So now we have is accessories to murder. We have accessories to murder at the Department of Justice level. If Eric Holder knew about this, if there's memos, emails where he knew about this and allowed it to continue, Eric Holder himself is an accessory to murder for those two agents, the Border Patrol agent and the ICE agent. Anybody else above or below that knew of this project, knew of these projects, knew what they were doing, knew that guns were being sent across the border through ATF protection. They were running a protection racket south of the border. Everyone involved is guilty of accessory to murder. That's a felony. And they should all be tried, and if convicted, hung out by a freaking yardarm. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. You're tuned in right here
to 2A Radio.
Right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back.
Welcome back. I'm going to read a quote to you, and you let me know who actually uttered these words. The concept of concealed loaded handguns in the possession of private citizens does not enhance public safety. On the contrary, it increases danger for everyday people as they go about their lives. This statement was issued by A, somebody in police work, somebody in law enforcement, B, a PhD level university professor, or C, an elected representative, someone elected to public office. Which one was it? Well, the answer is C. Those were uttered by Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. Illinois, the only state left in the entire country now with no provision for carrying concealed weapons. Wisconsin was the other one. There were two, but Wisconsin now has a CCW law that will be coming online later this year. In Illinois, here's the story. The concept of concealed loaded handguns, or the reality of concealed loaded handguns. Which is it? Either way, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn reckons Illinois is better off without armed citizens walking freely about the land of Lincoln. So if a bill allowing residents to exercise their Second Amendment rights to keep and bear arms hits his desk, what's Quinn going to do? He's going to veto it. Here's his thoughts. He says, I don't think we're in the business of trying to increase danger to the people of Illinois. That's what he says. He's getting it exactly backwards. He says, we want to work with our law enforcement and prevent bad things from happening. I think the passage of this law by the General Assembly would be most unwise, and they should know where their governor stands and where the people stand. You want a little bit more irony? Let's take this little jump here. Here's a quote. I cannot imagine a reason you need to carry a concealed loaded weapon unless you're willing to use it on another human being, says Jennifer Loudon, the widow of a Chicago police officer by the name of Thor Soderberg, who was shot on the job just last summer. Just quote, I cannot wish that on anybody else. I do not want another family to ever have to go through what our family has had to go through. Okay. Well, here's what they failed to report. Officer Soderberg was killed by a perp who'd wrestled away Soderberg's service weapon. Rest assured that the struggle for the Illinois concealed carry continues. Meanwhile, it seems that NRA lobbyist Todd Vandermeide shares kind of the same analysis of these gun control philosophy. He says, Pat Quinn can talk a very good game about being for the little guy or the working stiffs. But what he's shown is that he's more of an elitist than ever before. So again, they're using a woman whose husband was killed by a gun by saying, I cannot imagine a reason you need to carry a concealed loaded weapon unless you're willing to use it on another human being. Now, this coming from a woman whose husband was killed with his own service gun. How about that? Well, there you go in Illinois. These are the scumbags that you have leading the charge to keep you under their thumb. Illinois, I'm quite sure, sooner or later, will be number one on Brady's list. So far, all of 2010, and so far this year, 4+ months into 2011, Not a single piece of anti-gun legislation has gotten through California legislature and been able to take effect. The one that was going to limit handgun ammo to 50 rounds per month. You had to show your ID, do thumbprints, fill out forms. The cops are supposed to keep track of all this, all that garbage. Well, there was a suit filed in literally in the 11th hour, about 2 days before the law was supposed to take effect. A judge, who's normally not kind to the gun crowd, looked at it and said, yeah, I'm looking at this for its constitutionality. And this law is just straight unconstitutional. You cannot do this. Now, what they're trying to do is they've already stopped the ability to own and possess and purchase a whole bunch of types of guns in California. But they can't really keep up with that. So what they decided was, we'll just go after the ammunition. That's like not wanting you to drive. So instead of your parents taking away your car keys, they take away your gas card and your money. So you can't afford gas. If you limit the supply of fuel, you don't need to limit the vehicles that are out there. Just take away what makes them run. If you want them to go absolutely nowhere, then what do? Well, that's a pretty easy answer. You take away the car batteries. Register the car. You don't have to register the car, but the batteries are an integral part. We need to have full control over that. So with that being said, they went after the ammo. Ammo's gone. Not going to be able to shoot your guns. Guys, that's exactly what happened on April 19th, 1775, when the British marched on Concord, Lexington. They went to go get the ammo depot, where they had all their powder and all of the shot for their guns. Well, all the farmers and residents in the area that they were able to muster up went and guarded that. They all used to keep their powder and all their stuff together. It's not easy to store black powder. In the 1700s, it's much more difficult to store black powder. So everybody got together. You'd have one big community shed where you kept the powder and the sensitive things to be able to run these black powder muskets, because you could create one large environment better than everybody having their own environment, which helps resist the elements so that the powder stays good. You get that black powder wet, it's done. Smokeless powder, they actually store that underwater in most places. Take it out, let it dry off, it's all good to go. Black powder, not the same. So they used to store it in communities. So the British, the Redcoats, the regulars, as they were called, the regulars, were on their way to take all of the ammo away from all the colonists. Take it away. You guys can keep your guns. We're going after your ammo because you keep it in one spot. And what happened? The first shots, what they call the shot heard around the world, the first shots of the Civil War started that day. Now, it was a year and 3 months later when you had the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Of course, it took a long time for the whole thing to get signed, but really the whole ceremony of such happened on July 4th, 1776. About 15, 16 months after the first shots were fired in the Revolutionary War at Concord, Lexington. Nobody had ever defied the British Army. They were the strongest, biggest, baddest army on God's green earth at the time, and had been for some time. But eventually, the citizens said, we've had enough. Now, what do you think is going to happen in Illinois? When the citizens say, look, I'm tired of being a victim of crime. You are violating the Heller and McDonald decisions. Somebody robs me in Illinois, and I can't defend myself with a gun. You know what I do? I sue the living hell out of the governor on down. Every single person in the state legislature that voted against it and allowed unconstitutional takeover of my rights in the state of Illinois. That's what I do. I do it in any state, not just Illinois. Stay tuned, guys. There's more to come. we're going to start dialing this thing in our final segment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on, we'll take you on. Headstrong to take on anyone. I know that you are wrong, and this is not where you belong.
Hi guys, welcome back. I'm going to read to you a piece called Three Reasons Gun Control Advocates Don't Want You to Have a Gun by Robert Ferengo. Now listen to this. He says, if you're wondering why the gun control community favors civilian disarmament, it's all about personal responsibility. They don't believe that Americans are responsible enough to own a gun. Why? I've got a simple list. But before I trot out the terrible trioka of gun-grabbing gibberish, I want to highlight an important point. Contrary to their public persecutions about good versus bad gun owners, gun control advocates do want to grab your guns, but they know they can't. And not just because the Supreme Court says they can't. Gun control advocates know there are several million Ted Nugent types ready to go the whole cold dead hands route. So they focus their efforts on preventing newbies from tooling up. By discouraging new firearms owners, to say the least, they can grab the guns before they're sold. They're gun aborigines, as it were. In this, they've been ridiculously successful. Although gun rights are on a roll, let's not forget that we're now only emerging from a period where gun control advocates ruled the day. You still can't carry concealed weapons in Illinois. New York? New Jersey? Forget about it. He says, my city of Providence, Rhode Island, concealed carry permit reads number 20. As in 20 ever. To stop American citizens from exercising their right to keep and bear arms, gun control advocates have a similar message. Guns are dangerous. Guns for unarmed civilians. I'm sorry, they're dangerous for unarmed civilians. Dangerous for armed civilians. Dangerous for children. Dangerous for police. Dangerous for society. Too dangerous for you. Here's the problem. Guns are dangerous. If they weren't dangerous, they wouldn't exist. What's more, people get shot. They get shot by guns. What's worse, dangerous people use them. Criminal, mentally deranged, and stupid people. There's no denying this fact. But there is a little matter of context. It's your job as a gun owner to provide the context for people who don't own guns or own them and support gun control anyway. To do that, you have to counter the three big lies that gun control advocates use to make their gun cases, that they are all too dangerous for civilians. Lies that are absorbed by people who've never really thought about it. Here they are. Number one, people are too stupid to own a gun. Well, that's certainly true that some people are too stupid to own guns. TTAG has a whole category worth of irresponsible gun owners of the day. And there are different posts that prove that point. In general, nothing could be further from the truth. At the risk of insulting the intelligence of the people who insult the intelligence of the existing and potential gun owners, shooting a firearm is a relatively simple business. You put the bullet in, that's the hard part, you aim the gun, you press the trigger. If you don't press the trigger, nothing happens. Statistics show that firearms are no more dangerous than a swimming pool, or automobiles, and in that case of children, plastic bags. That's before you execute firearms-related suicides and gun crimes committed by gang members. My local gun range, open to the public, says it pays less than $1,000 a month for insurance coverage. The fact that there are tens of millions of gun owners walking around who've never shot themselves or another human being also attests to the simplicity and inherent safety of firearms ownership. Not that they're smart, because they're smart enough. If you're fighting this, people are too dumb to own a home. I'm sorry, too dumb to own a gun at home, Meme. Keep in mind that gun control advocates are, like gun rights advocates, a highly educated group of people. The key difference, gun grabbers are elitists. This is the main reason that gun control has found so much favor over the last century. The basic elitists control the media. The easiest way to counter the argument, ask a simple series of questions. Do you think the average person is intelligent enough to handle poisonous cleaning chemicals? Can they cut their food with a sharp knife and not use it to stab themselves or others? Can most people operate a car safely? The last one may be a bit of a stretch, but, you know, they'll get your idea. Number two, people are too mentally unstable to own a gun. Remember emotional intelligence? Gun control advocates have absolutely exploited a general principle from the book's core proposition. Most people are emotionally retarded. In the gun grabber's worldview, the average person is prone to flipping out, grabbing a gun, and shooting someone. Or a bunch of someone's. Yes, it happens. But tens of thousands of mentally disturbed people aren't shooting people on a regular basis. Or at all, for that matter. Even if there were tens of thousands of mentally challenged murderers, that would still represent a fraction of the total U.S. population. As for spree killings, they're so rare, the President of the United States felt obliged to fly our 747 to Arizona to personally praise the survivors of the recent massacre in Arizona. Some gun control advocates reckon that anyone who shoots anyone is mentally challenged. Ipso facto, the average American may not know Latin, but they know that most people who shoot people are not mentally ill individuals off their meds struggling with inner demons. They're criminals. They're bad guys. Again, it does happen, but wacko serial and spree killings don't lead to new gun control measures because Americans know a bad-headed aberration like Jared Lee Loeffner when they see one. The fundamental flaw in the gun grabbers we're all one step from madness. That argument is that few people have had any direct contact with someone who's gone off the rails and shot somebody. And that's because, statistically speaking, it just doesn't happen. Ultimately, thankfully, personal experience trumps media. Equally important, the fear of psycho killers is greater than the fear of someone becoming one. Besides, how do you counter a madman? With criminals, you can call the cops or negotiate, at least in theory. But a nut job, you need, well, a gun. Hence Arizona's determination not to do a damn thing about gun control after the Loeffner killings. The best way to counter the gun control anti-flip-out meme? Make it personal. Force gun control advocates to confirm their elitism. I own a gun. If I got really angry or really sad, do you think I'd shoot, namely, family members? So why am I so different from other gun owners? I don't think I am. I don't think you can devise a law that stops the crazies without stopping the rest of us, do you? By this point, a gun control advocate may start quoting the one life is saved argument. Basically, they're asking you to jettison the very thing that they claim to promote, common sense. Common sense says life is about balancing risk with reward. A fraction of a fraction of the total population of American children may shoot themselves with daddy's gun, but society is generally safer from criminals when its law-abiding citizens are armed. Or is it? Here's the final argument. Number three, gun owners are trigger happy. Gun control advocates, like the very own just Helmkes of the world, see gun owners as wannabe or proto-vigilantes. They're just itching to take the law into their own hands at the right end of a gun. And if you let or allow average people to own guns, they'll forego their reliance on civility and the criminal justice system and use their firearms to execute rough justice. Call it the return of the wild. Admittedly, armed aggression against perceived slight and different threats, it's not an unknown occurrence, especially when it overlaps with the aforementioned mental instability or somehow involves gang signs. Real trigger happiness an average Joe is engaging in, some sort of a road rage shooting or some neighbor-on-neighbor gunfighting, is exciting stuff, but statistically meaningless. Unless you redefine legitimate armed self-defense as trigger-happy behavior, as many gun advocates do. So, let's drill it down a bit. Nobody knows many defensive uses of guns unless they actually are a gun owner. So do not be preached to by someone who's anti-gun that is ignorant enough to know nothing about them.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com.